any clue how important blue-collar workers are. If we didn't have awesome blue-collar workers, our lives would cease to exist. This is the Lost Art of the Skilled Trades Podcast. Debunking myths and shining a spotlight on the unsung heroes of our economy. We'll talk about everything from plumbing and electrical work to welding and beyond. Because let's face it, these are the backbone of our infrastructure. We'll talk about the skilled trades gap and uncover the countless benefits of pursuing a path in the trades. This is the Lost Art of the Skilled Trades Podcast. And now your host, a passionate advocate for the trades and the co-founding member of STACK, the Skilled Trades Advisory Council, and co-founder and CEO of ToolFetch, this is Andrew Brown.
He's a true advocate of the skilled trades, and he's a race car driver. I want to hear about that. Doug, it's a pleasure.
Pleasure. Glad you have me. Thanks.
So it's interesting how you and I got together. Obviously, we connected on LinkedIn, and you're a skilled trades advocate, but you're right down the block from me.
Yeah, actually, that's the case. I didn't realize either until I looked a little deeper into it.
Yeah.
Pretty interesting, right?
Yeah.
We understood each other, didn't even realize.
Exactly. I'm sure we passed by plenty of times that we didn't even know. You have an interesting background, and I want to hear about how you started. And there's a couple of stories I wanted to get a little bit more clarity on. And sure. One has to do with your, I believe it was your senior year with a guidance counselor that kind of changed your career path. And also, I believe, which led to your uncle.
My cousin.
Yep. Sorry, your cousin.
Yeah. So pretty much my senior year of high school, I had to visit my guidance counselor before I could graduate. I went to Catholic school, so she was a nun and a pretty tough lady. And she picked up my folder and says, "What do we got here?" And she goes, "Where are we doing, Mr. Winston? Let's see." She goes, "Westchester Community College for Electrical Engineering Technology." And she slams the phone. She goes, "What kind of a bullshit class is that?" I'm like, "Excuse me, sister?" She says, "Yeah, what gives here? Why don't you take an engineering?" I said, "I don't want to be an engineer." "Why not?" I'm like, "I hate math. Not really. I don't want to sit behind a desk. No, it's not my thing. I don't want to do it." She pushes the engineering thing a little bit, and then she goes, "All right, what do you want to do?" I'm like, "I don't know." She goes, "Well, why are you going to college?" I said, "My mother says I got to go to college." She goes, "All right, let's think about this. What do you like to do? What are you going to do when you leave here today?" "I'm going to my friend John's house. I'm going to help work on his car. He's building this new 1968 Cougar, and I'm going to do this wiring for the stereo. But I'm helping the other guys with the engine and stuff. I'm learning a little. I don't know blah about that." She goes, "You like to work with your hands?" "Yeah, I like to work with my hands." "You like electrical stuff?" "Yeah, I like electrical stuff." She goes, "So why don't you become an electrician?" I'm like, "I don't want a blue-collar job." She goes, "You just told me you don't want to sit behind a desk." I'm like, she goes, "Don't you know any electricians?" Like, "Yeah, my cousin's an electrician. He owns his own company." She goes, "Good. You're going to go home. You're going to call him. You're going to ask him if you can work for him this summer." And I'm like, "Yes, sister." Fast forward, I tell my mother this, and she goes, "Oh, that's good. She thinks that'll help you in college. Great." And I'm like, yeah, that's it. My grandfather makes a call and calls my cousin because my cousin's Al's father. And my grandfather were brothers. He was my second cousin. Because he says, "Yeah, come on over to the house, and we'll talk about it and see if you're really interested." "Okay. And don't go to my old house. Go to my new house." "No, the house you built in Tuckahoe. The house in Scarsdale." "Oh, you built another house?" "Yeah, it's my new house. Here's the address." So now I get there, and I'm 17 years old, haven't even graduated high school yet. And he says, "You like it?" And I'm like, "Yes, brand new 3,000 square foot house, hasn't even moved into yet. Little Scarsdale, which anybody doesn't know where that is, that's in a very affluent area." And he goes, "Got no mortgage." "You have no mortgage?" He goes, "Yeah." "Yep." He says, I bought the property for cash. It had a house on it, knocked the house down, subdivided the property. It's two building lots. I sold off the other lot, sold my house in Tuckahoe. So pretty much built this free and clear. Yeah, no mortgage." Time he's 32 years old. So I'm like, "Okay, some money to be made here. Okay, let's talk about this now." He starts telling me what an electrician does. And I'm like, "Yes, sounds good." By the time I left his house that night, it was probably about 9:30, and I made up my mind. Like, that's it. I know what I want to do. I want to be an electrical contractor. That's it. I'm going to be a contractor, own my own business. Set myself a set of goals. I said, yep, I'm going to get my license by the time I'm 25. I'm going to build a house by the time I'm 30. I'm all set. That's it. I got my whole life planned. I'm done. That's it. And I pretty much went out and executed on that plan pretty much pretty close to those timelines too as well. But yeah, that was the whole start of it. That's the way it shook out. But can't say it was bad. I definitely lacked direction prior to that. And,
Most of us do.
Because very simple, when I went to high school, and this is 36 years ago, you basically were told you're going to go to college. And you have to go to college. And you have no choice but to go to college. And if you don't go to college, you're going to be a failure. So that was your only option. And I had another friend of mine who got into skilled trades, and he went to auto body school. And again, from there, he doesn't work at a body shop anymore. He's actually manager and worked for a paint company, owned his own paint company for a while. So again, I think people tend to get fixated on the starting point and have this impression of the skilled trades that you start as an electrician or a carpenter or a plumber, and you die as one. And my personal feeling is that you could get a degree and you're an accountant and you can go work for an accounting firm and you can go open your own accounting firm, or you could just work there for 30 years and be a staff accountant.
Right.
So again, it's up to you. What do you want to do with your life, and what are your goals? But you don't need college to be successful. You need to have the right mindset. You need to find something you're passionate about, and you need to figure out what that career path is, what it takes to get there. And a lot of times it could be an apprenticeship. It could be trade school, but it doesn't have to be college.
And when you look back, you said you were tinkering with cars, and I believe you used to race cars, or you still race cars, but back in the day, I think you did some street racing and stuff like that in the past.
Probably.
A little bit.
Probably.
But you were always working with your hands. You always were tinkering.
Yeah, I was. Everything as a young kid, is actually a pretty funny story. It ties into my cousin again. My cousin went to the same grade school I went to, and we used to have TVs in the classroom. Teachers could never get the TVs to work properly because they would pull on the TV and the coax cable would get pulled out of the jack, and I would always fix it. And it was funny because they would actually, like, the eighth grade teacher would say, go down to the fourth grade and get Doug Winston. He knows how to fix these things. And I'd go and I'd put the coax connector back together the best I could, get it working, get it up, get the TV going. It was like, that was my job. And years later, I'm talking to my cousin one day, we're, you know, working on a job together after I started work for him. And he says, yeah, I didn't do good in school. School wasn't my thing. I couldn't do it. The only thing I enjoyed doing in school was fixing the TV. That was my job. So you used to fix the TV too. It's just really funny, but true story. So it's about what you're interested in.
Yeah.
That's why we can't learn. That's why I always tell people we can't learn something we have no interest in. And that's why 90% of students fail, because they're forced to learn things that are part of the curriculum that they have absolutely zero desire to learn. And I think that's our biggest problem. We don't actually look and say, what is it you're interested in? And then work on a career path that helps them, or work on at least schooling that helps them to develop that goal towards that career path. So,
and where do you think it comes from? Upbringing, parents, where to get a four-year degree, maybe not go into trades. Do you think it comes from parents and guidance counselors? And
yeah, it's just the culture and conditioning that we've been indoctrinating kids with for the last 40 years. Let's face it, teachers sell education. That's their brand, right? It's, again, if you sell Pepsi, you don't tell people how great Coke is. So at the end of the day, that's what teachers do. They're taught to, you know, sell education, and they do. And to them, they think that, again, they think they're doing the right thing. I don't say that teachers are malicious about it. It's just that's what they've been, you know, conditioned to believe. There's a lot of misinformation as to how much people can make in the skilled trades and a path of upward mobility. It's sold as a dead-end job for the most part. And it's the furthest thing from the truth, because there's tons of upward mobility. You don't have to own your own company. You could certainly work for people and make a great living as you escalate through the various different levels that are required in the trades. We start out as helpers or apprentices. We become journeymen. From journeyman, we may become a foreman. Foreman can become a general foreman and be in charge of more foremen, and he's going to get commensurate pay for that. You could be a superintendent and have people on multiple jobs and be looking at them. And then a lot of people, and this is the way it used to happen. I don't know if it happens so much anymore. We could get into that why, but you would take a guy who was in the field for a lot of years. He's a bright guy. Hey, you know what? Let's bring him in the office. He'd be a good estimator. We have an opening. He knew every part and piece. So you taught him how to estimate. But again, he escalated himself to that new level. Those estimators became project managers. Some of those project managers became project executives. The project executives, a lot of them became vice presidents and presidents of companies. You didn't have to go and open your own and own your own business. On the flip side, there's a lot of guys that worked in the trade that said, hey, I'm going to get my license. And they worked themselves, one or two guys, and made a great living for themselves. That was the extent that they wanted to risk. They said, hey, I don't want to own a big, huge company and take a chance on stuff. I like keep it simple. So I'll take a couple of guys with me. We'll go, we'll work, and we'll make money together. And yeah. All of these are viable options for young men and women today. So
yeah,
just need to show them.
Yeah. And there is that misconception out there of, like you said, just to reiterate, that it's a dead end job, that it's dirty, and it's just, it's not going to go anywhere. So I understand a lot of this is coming, driving from guidance counselors and teachers and parents, that you're getting the information, but it's information that it's older information that has not been updated in a sense that people are aware of these opportunities. Like you said, you could start off as apprentice and journeyman foreman and work your way up to in the office or owning the company one day or owning your own company one day.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Again, there's no limits. There are no limits. Any job, whether it requires a degree or not, is a starting point. It's an entry level position. What you do with it is what matters. And again, we have to stop telling people that there's limitations. Oh, you'll make more money at first, but eventually you'll make more with a degree. That's not necessarily the case. Again, you could become a doctor or a lawyer. There's some doctors that make $1 million, $2 million a year. There's some doctors or general practitioners that make less than people that work for me. And that's been told to me by doctors. So I'm not making that up. So again, there's levels to things. And I'm not saying it's good or bad or anything else. You need to find the level that's good for you. But it all starts with finding something that you have a passion for. Because again, we can't teach people something that they have no interest in. And that's the key. Exposing kids to career paths, whether that be doctor, accountant, lawyer, plumber, electrician. Maybe we expose a kid who says, oh, I'm really into electrical. I don't know if I want to be an engineer or an electrician. Or maybe there's actually something in between that, if, again, we just need to expose them to all those various career paths, because they may turn around and find some niche type of career where, oh, there's not a lot of people doing this. This pays really well. And I always say the riches are in the niches. So if you want to do the same thing as everybody else, okay, you got to just do a lot more. But when you operate in the niches, you can do a little better for yourself.
No, for sure. And look, that also comes down to ambition and drive. What you said, someone just stays at a certain level and doesn't level up. That's the individual. You know, I always say that it's hard to teach that drive and ambition. I feel like it's deep down inside. There's only so much can tell you, someone could tell you, but it's this burning desire of just wanting to do better and level up.
Yeah, you can motivate, you can mentor, but ultimately that's all you can do, because if it doesn't exist, if that person doesn't have, again, part of it, risk tolerance. Some people are really good at what they do and they'll never, ever open their own business because they just don't have a tolerance for risk. And if you don't have a tolerance for risk, you're not going to be able to do it. By the same token, it takes money. You need money to grow a business. Again, look, you could be self-employed, and that's a little different. There's being self-employed and owning a business are two different things. So again, levels, scale to whatever makes you comfortable. And that's really what it comes down to.
And back in your career, when you were working for your cousin, that was a few years, and then you, I guess you went off on your own and started your own business at that point. How many mentors did you have across your career?
I've had a few, each at different levels and different particular times in my career. Again, obviously, my cousin taught me the basic skill sets, and made sure that I had a knowledge of the National Electric Code, which is what you'll be tested on when you ultimately go to become a master electrician. I always like to tell people that once you actually become a master electrician and open your own business, you become an apprentice of business, because now you are a master in working with your hands and you still have no clue what goes on in the business world. So you're now forced into this world of accountants and insurance and taxes and all these other things that is very intimidating. I was very lucky. My sister had worked for a fence company, and her boss, Phil, found out that I just went in business as an electrician. And he says, I need an electrician to wire my house. Tell him to call me. I can't get anybody to come over here. So I met him, and he said, I'm going to give you this job here. It's whatever it is. Tell me what it is. And he was a really good guy. And then we started talking, and he says, you want to get to the next level, you got a few things you have to do. Come to my office. And I would sit in his office with him, and he would say to me, here, now you want to bid on these kind of jobs, you know, you have to go out, and you're going to have to get a bond if you want to do public work. So you're going to have to talk to your insurance people and see what they can do. You got to get a performance bond. And so he was definitely a mentor throughout my career, early years. Ultimately, we ended up being partners in the building I'm sitting in right here. And we ended up buying out his daughter when he passed away in 2015. But he was definitely a mentor. And there's other people to different degrees that taught me things incrementally. At some point, it becomes a self-teaching thing, but you learn to find the right people to seek out to ask those questions to. And there's a lot of them, a lot of those people who I definitely met and learned a lot from. It probably couldn't even give you an idea how many, but there was a lot. But those were the two founding foundations. One person who, again, taught me the means and methods of the trade to become a master in it, and the person who taught me more of the business aspects of it. So those were probably the two most influential people as far as mentors in the trades for me.
And you brought up a good point. You know, you mastered with your hands, but now you're running a business. It's a completely different game.
Totally.
It's a completely different game.
I had very intimidating. Very, very intimidating.
I mean, I had that experience about 21 years ago when we started our tool business. Nobody told me about all that I learned over time, and I had mentors myself. If I did not have mentors, I'd be going this way instead of this way. So they really set you, as long as you get the right person who can drive you down that path, it shaves a good amount of years off, as opposed to you doing it yourself and not understanding what you should be doing and what you shouldn't be doing.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And then that guidance is invaluable. I had a probably somewhere around 2002, 2003, I was asked to teach a class on estimating, and I started teaching estimating. And then I had a tenant of mine in the building here who actually ran a school, and he would do prep classes for guys that were going to get their master electrician's license. And he came to me and he said, I know you teach estimating already. I've got a lot of people that are asking me to do an estimating class because they're like, I don't even know how to price a job. And from that, we also evolved. We had a business basics class. And I said, no, you know what? I thought of all the things that I really struggled with as a young contractor. And I said, let's put together a format and let some people come in here and learn that. And Unfortunately, I don't have time anymore to teach. I like to teach, but there's only so many things we could do, and I got a pretty full plate. So maybe when I retire, I'll go back to teaching. But yeah, these were huge concepts that once you are the master of your trade, you now enter a completely intimidating facet of your life in which, do I really want to do this? How do I do this? It's intimidating. There's no doubt about it.
And how does someone pick a trade? Obviously, you're in the electrical side. Why does someone want to be a plumber or electrician or a carpenter? What do you think that evolves for someone younger?
I think we all have certain things that appeal to us in terms of a little more desirability. I'd say in general, most people in the trades have two things in common. Either A, they like to create something from nothing, or B, they like to fix something that's broken. Me, I always liked both, but I liked electrical things. My father was, as a kid, I helped my father put stereos in cars. And to me, that was a lot of fun. It was interesting. So that kind of got me just familiar with that rough little part of wiring something. But one of the things that I never had, and I think it's a shame, and I'm involved with this now, is career fairs. I'm involved with a group, Bring Back the Trades, and they're on the hood of my race car, and we work with Steve Turner and the people there a lot. And one of the things we're working to do, Steve's working really hard. He's doing career fairs up in New England and bringing kids in there. And his concept of career fairs, which I think is fantastic, is that he's got a plumbing contractor who stands there, who actually shows kids how to cut pipe with a pipe cutter, how to put the fittings together, and then he and him as the plumber will sweat the pipe and show them how you sweat pipe. And the electricians are showing kids how to run wires and bend pipe, and how we bend conduit to run the wires in. And he's had, again, machine operators come in and bring a piece of equipment where I'll let the kids come into the cab and actually sit there and sit next to him and see how that's operated and things of that nature. So that hands-on career fair kind of thing, we're actually looking to bring that to Westchester in the near future. Hopefully next year, hopefully spring of next year, we're going to be doing something here. I'm working on that now. But unfortunately, I never had that. So hopefully we're going to bring that to a whole new generation of kids and maybe inspire them to see if that's something they want to do. And again, we're not trying to push anybody into something. We're trying to give people opportunities to find out, is there something I'm missing? Do I need to go to college and change my major 3 times to find out what it is I'm interested in? No, we're going to show you different careers. And again, I encourage people to look at all careers. And again, you may say, look, I have no desire in this. It's not my thing. I'm into computers. I want to write code. That's great. There's nothing wrong with that. That's fantastic. But yeah, my job here is to expose kids to the skilled trades and try to get them excited about it. If they don't get excited about it, that's fine. Like I said, we need doctors, we need lawyers, we need accountants, we need computer people, but we also need plumbers, electricians, and carpenters, because without them, we need diesel mechanics. I have a fleet of trucks, and one of the hardest things is to find a diesel mechanic. We went crazy to find diesel mechanics. Because again, people just aren't getting into this. It's, you know, you want to be a grease monkey. That's the response they get. Diesel mechanic make really good money. And the attrition rate on that is very high. I'm lucky in all the various different business ventures I'm involved in, is I get to hire a lot of these different classifications and categories. And a lot of times we're going to the military. We're looking for people who are graduating from the military with these skills, because at least we know they've been trained, and we love to hire veterans. But it's tough. It's really tough to go out there. And you go to a tech school and you say to them, hey, I'm interested in hiring somebody. And they'll go, everybody in my class that's graduating next semester already has a job lined up. So think about that.
So do you think it's a lack of people? It's just not enough people?
It's a lack of people who are being made familiar with the opportunities. That's the problem. Again, when schools, and again, this is, I've said this to a lot of people, if you grow up in a more predominantly rural area, you might get a little more exposure to the skilled trades. If you grow up in the city, you may actually get a little more, because some of the bigger cities actually do have some programs where they try to drive kids into the trades. When you grow up in the suburbs, it's pretty much all about, every high school wants to tell you the percentage of kids that get into the college of their choice. That's all they're being groomed for. I look at college and I look at high school, and I think the biggest thing we've done today is that we have lost focus of what high school is supposed to be about. High school was intended to prepare people for the workforce and to prepare a small number of people for professional endeavors. The engineers, the lawyers, the doctors, the accountants, those people that were going to go into those sectors. Today, it's college for all, get a degree. You can never go wrong having a degree. You can go wrong having a lot of debt in something that you have absolutely no idea how you're going to make a living. So I think we do a big disservice to kids just telling them, go to college and get a degree. You can't go wrong. I think you can. I think we need to show them and find out what it is, what gets them excited, and then help them move in that direction.
What do you think is the sweet spot for a younger kid to get, or starting to get their, get involved in the trades, or at least being exposed to the trades? Is it high school? Is it middle school? Is it somewhere in between there?
It should, it really should be middle school. Years ago, we had shop classes. Now, I didn't have shop classes. Catholic school, we didn't have shop classes. It just wasn't, you know, it wasn't part of the, it just wasn't capable. We didn't have the money for that kind of thing, even if there was the desire to teach that over academics. But today, there's not many schools with shop classes anymore. They're just pretty much being disbanded. I was very surprised. I had a friend of mine who was a shop teacher in a school in New Rochelle in middle school. And I was in shock. I was like, Jack, they still have wood shop in middle school? And he goes, hang on a second. It's not what you think. It's not what you think. He goes, it's one thing to teach a kid how to make a birdhouse. It's another to suggest he become a carpenter. He says, right. My job is to foster a interest in engineering. If I ever suggested that a kid be a carpenter, I'd lose my job. So just gives you a little background into the mindset of our educators. But I think we need to be exposing kids to careers in middle school. And by high school, we need to be looking at attracting them in two separate directions. The kids who are sure that they want to go out into a professional career, and the kids that are sure that they want to be involved in the trades. And we need to be able to put them in tracks that help them. Today, the skill sets that we are graduating kids from high school with is atrocious. Most kids can't read a tape measure. That's a fact. That's a fact. You'd be amazed. You have to teach kids how to read a tape measure. It's not considered important. These are basic things that we learned in school. I mean, again, these are basic things you learned in geometry. You took geometry in second grade and you had a protractor and you had a compass and you made circles and you learned how angles and bisect an angle and all this stuff. And you know what? As a kid, you didn't really know what you were going to do with that. But guess what? If we teach a kid today and say, hey, you need geometry when you're a carpenter, now it's relevant education. So rather than just turning around saying, well, you need to take geometry to get a Regents diploma, let's explain to kids why we're doing this. For me, I hated math. When the time came that I had to start learning facets of the National Electric Code that required me to do load calculations and things of that nature, all of a sudden, oh, okay, I know how to do algebra. This is okay. I could do this. This isn't so bad. And yeah, it doesn't really matter. And then once you start owning your own business and you start doing accounting and you're counting your money, math's not so bad anymore.
Exactly. And there's a lot to unpack here, but what you said about shop class, I didn't have shop class either. I grew up, I wasn't exposed to it. And a lot of other kids are not exposed to it. If they were at least exposed to it, you know, you get to use, like you said, the basics, power tools and machines and just the basics of basics. And that might spark in some sort of interest in somebody that would never have had that interest. And it's just not there.
Yeah. Auto shop. I can't tell you how many people have said to me, the only reason I finished high school was because I could go to auto shop, and I looked forward to that every day. And for being able to do that, that kept me in high school. And I can't tell you how many people, and I'll tell you what, one of those people is a friend of mine who just sold his automotive business and retired. He's my age. And another one does something totally unrelated. He's in an automotive related field, so to speak. But his exact statement to me was, what auto shop got me through high school.
It's interesting. What about the aging skill trades? The men and women who are 5, 10 years out. And there's an example here. Yeah. We had some trouble in our house. We had some septic work done, and we had a leak in our laundry, and there was water coming down into our kitchen. It was a whole thing. But we called the right people who came over, and they fixed it right away. And I got to talking to a couple of them. And they said, we're retiring soon. But I said, okay, do you have somebody who's going to be taking? But no, there isn't anybody. I said, what's going to happen to the trade? There's no real, there's no answer. And they want the couple of things that they had said. No one wants to get on their hands and knees and do the work and get a little dirty. But they're very successful in their own right, in their own fields. But it was sad to see that there's no one to take over their legacy and to keep it going.
An example of that, back, I'm going to say in August, I had to go for continuing education classes to renew some of my master licenses. And the person who runs those classes said, before we get started, I just want to do a little exercise. So he said, how many people in this room are between 20 and 30 years old? And one guy raised his hand. He goes, oh, we got one. Okay. How many people are between 30 and 40? It was like two people. How many people are between 40 and 50? Probably about 70% of the class raised their hand. How many people are over the age of 50? How many people are over the age of 60? Two people raised their hand. He goes, there you go. There's your succession plan. There's three people in here. That's your succession plan. And it's no joke. The attrition rates are devastating, and we cannot bring in apprentices fast enough to backfill this void we're going to have in the trades. And what do you think that's going to lead to? Supply and demand, right? Oh, you can't get anybody? I'll raise my price. So what's good now is probably only going to get better.
It's good for the trades, not good for the homeowner. Their prices will go up.
Homeowner is one aspect of it. How about the guy that builds the bridge, the guy that builds the stadium, the high rise, everything, the power plant? It's tremendous. Lineman, we had a very huge, probably 10 years ago, the statistics on 50-year-old linemen were not good. And luckily, we're bringing in apprentices, but people are less tolerant to power outages today. Everybody's got to charge their iPhone. It's a great trade. We employ a lot of linemen here. And if anybody doesn't know what that is, then those are the guys that go out in the bucket trucks and put the power lines up. Those are the guys that pick up the lines when the lines come down after a hurricane. And things vary around the country. I'll just give you a little perspective. Our linemen are union, based in the Northeast here. When they go out on storm restoration, they get paid double time, 16 hours a day, 7 days a week. You guys are taking home. They got checks that are, they're grossing $11,000, $12,000 a week.
Amazing.
Their normal pay rate is close to $60 an hour right now. That's your normal pay rate.
And did they go to college?
Over 40.
And no college. No college. You no just college. Said it right there.
Huh. No college. Nope. Again, not saying that's for everybody. They're a special breed. Not everybody wants to go open a truck and work on 15,000 volts live. But if you do, there's a lot of money to be made. I'll be the first to tell you.
Yeah, there is. Just as you said, you didn't go to college. You don't have the debt. And you're ahead of the game.
Yep. Absolutely.
So tell me about the race car. Tell me about the Trans Am.
So I've always had some aspect, like you said, 16 years old, you street raced, and not that was a good thing or legal. And then you got a little older, and we drag raced legally. Old Bridge Township Raceway Park was where everybody pretty much around here went. And I drag raced cars probably up until I opened my business. And then my drag car sat in my garage for the better part of probably 18 years, and I didn't do anything with cars. And then I happened to buy a car that came with a free day at Skip Barber's Racing School. And I went out and drove on a racetrack, and the bug bit me really hard. And I ended up going to get my racing license. I started racing when I was 40 years old. And I club raced for many years. And then about 4 years ago, my teammate that I race with now, he's a younger fellow, he's in his 30s. He said, I'm not racing with you guys next year. I said, what do you mean? Now I'm going to Trans Am. I said, oh, that's a pro series. It's serious. I think I'm ready. And I said, I wonder if I could hang with these guys. So I decided instead of just selling my race car and buying a car and finding out that I'm not going to be any good, I rented a ride with one of the top teams. And I said, if I can place somewhere around mid-pack, then I'm going to sell my car and buy one of these things. So my first race I did with very little practice in a car I never drove before, finished 16th out of 30 cars. And I said, yeah, it's okay. That's what I'm going to do. Went out and bought a car, and I now race in the Pirelli Trans Am Series. I do about 6 races a year. It's pro series. It's broadcast on CBS Sports. A lot of people that were on their way up, on their way to NASCAR and other series running there. We've got a lot of people that ran in professional series on higher levels and come back down. So it's a great place. And it's good. It's a place for me to do something I love. And it brought me to my involvement with Bring Back the Trades. I happened to meet Steve Turner about a year ago. And I looked and I said, you know what? I think what we're going to do is a reverse sponsorship. So I got in touch with him and I said, I think we could do some good stuff together here. And I'm going to offer you sponsorship on the hood of my car, and we're going to work together, and I'm going to help you raise some money and raise awareness. And we just finished our first season, and I think it's going really well. We've got some good exposure. I've been trying to use social media and different things to try to reach out to the parents, because these are the people we need to get interested, to get involved. And if you can catch their attention, and a lot of guys are car guys, they see, what's this big Bring Back the Trades thing about? I had a post a couple of weeks ago, 400,000 views. And so we're getting some attention. So hopefully that's going to turn into more awareness and help us bring back the trades and get kids involved. But it starts with the parents. If we don't get the parents involved, the schools aren't going to do it. The schools are going to keep pushing college for all. So we really need to educate parents that there's a good career path out there. Let your kids explore it. Don't be afraid. Don't tell them that it's a dead end career. So we're educating parents, and that's where I try to come in and let parents know that there are good career opportunities out there. So that's what I've been trying to do through our race and get a little exposure. And as I said, it's been working. We're getting some traction. So we'll be back at it again next year, and hopefully we got a few other tricks up our sleeve that can't talk about yet.
And that's great to hear. And I know Steve, and I've spoken to Steve before, and it's amazing what he's doing with Bring Back the Trades. And it's great that you guys are working together to get some exposure, but it's also great what he does of bringing in somebody in the trades to show kids one-on-one how to do certain things in a particular trade. And it's amazing to see.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, we're very much alike in that we both are very intense and very passionate about certain things. And when it comes to the skilled trades, we both share that passion. Steve himself is quite a warrior. He runs ultra marathons, doing 50-mile races, running 60 miles a day. So he's got his own kind of thing that drives him and motivates him. So we're similar on that level. And then again, using that energy and trying to channel it towards something positive. So I'm happy to help, and I'm glad I met him, and I'm glad we're able to do what we can for bring back the trades and anybody who's looking to get into the trades today.
And yeah, again, it's amazing to hear your unique perspective on the trades and your career and what you're doing across the board with the trades. And it's just a monumental effort that you're doing, that Steve's doing. And we all play a part and we're all working together for the same end result to really bring back the trades. So thank you, Doug, for being on the podcast. If someone wanted to get in contact with you, email address, website, what would be the best way to contact you directly?
Best way to get in touch with me, you can feel free to send me an email, doug@dmelectrical.com. And I frequently do get some inquiries from parents, and sometimes people have questions on apprenticeships or what's the best way to go about things, and I'm more than happy to help. So feel free to reach out. And again, too, they can use bringbackthetrades.org. They can look into there, and I'm sure Steve's got some methods in there where people can get more information. And again, if you can't get in touch with me, get in touch with Steve through his website there, and I can always help out. He always forwards me requests, people looking at apprenticeships and different things and various different questions. I'm always there to help. I'm more than help to talk to kids, parents, anybody.
That's great. Thank you. Thank you to our listeners out there. Our mission is to flip the script on the blue collar trades and make them cool once again. We'll see you in the next episode.
You've been listening to the Lost Art of the Skilled Trades podcast. Sure, nothing wrong with going to college, but there's just as much honor and need for people to be blue collar workers that are the very backbone of our infrastructure. Thank you for listening to the show. If you enjoyed it, make sure to like, rate, and review. We'll be back soon. But in the meantime, follow Andrew Brown on LinkedIn, TikTok, YouTube, Twitter, and Instagram, and hit the website at www.andrewbrowntrades.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.